again, welcome everyone. This is Chris Atwood, and this is our monthly Discover Your Passions calls. As I hope all of you know, I'm the co-author of the New York Times bestseller, The Passion Test, The Effortless Path to Discovering Your Life Purpose. And on these calls every month, we take some time to just review some of the principles of living a passionate life, take a volunteer through the process so that you can understand the process a little more deeply, maybe get some insight into the subtleties of the passion test, and then I do my best to answer as many of your questions as I possibly can. And we'll answer some of those before the first hour is up. I know some of you may have to leave at the end of the first hour, and you're more than welcome to do that. I'll kind of bring the first hour to a close. But those of you who would like to stay on for the last half hour, that'll be your opportunity. If you have some questions that have popped up during the call, then I'll give you the chance to ask those. And then I'll go through some of the other questions that were asked in the, that were submitted prior to the call. So again, I'm so happy to be with all of you. You know, for me, I've gone through my life and for a good portion of my life, I was fortunate. As maybe some of you have been. I was fortunate in that kind of by accident, I made choices based on the things that really drew me, that pulled my heart. But there was a time in my life that I got married. And anybody on the line got married?
Yes.
Some of you? Good. Well, maybe you noticed that some things change when you get married. I don't know if you noticed that, but one of the biggest things that changed for me is that my thinking changed. And you know, when we talk about the passion test, we say there's only three things that prevent anyone from living a passionate life. And those three things are false beliefs, false concepts, and false ideas. And while I didn't know it at the time, I had a very big false belief. You know, my false belief was that it was my job to earn the money for our household, and that therefore I should make decisions about what I was going to do based on how much money it would bring in. Today we talk about that, Janet and I talk about it as money-based decision-making as opposed to passion-based decision-making, and maybe some of you have had the experience as well. And I can tell you that money-based decision-making is not sustainable. In fact, I could give a long explanation, which I'm not going to do tonight, of really why money-based decision-making was the fundamental cause of the economic crisis that hit the United States and all over the world, the economic system throughout the world in 2008. But in our personal lives, it shows up just as vividly. And it's one of the explanations why 80% of the population in the United States, 80% of the working population, is not passionate about the work that they do. Because the fact is that they are making decisions based on something other than what matters most to them, what they care most deeply about. And so I started doing that. You know, I got married and I started making decisions based upon how much money would I make, what sort of equity position could I get, what sort of advancement opportunities were there. Now, I don't want to suggest that all those things are not useful and worthy to take into account. But when you make those the prime determinant of your decisions, as I did, then before too long, you're going to find yourself in a pretty unhappy place, and that's what happened to me. I went through four different positions over a period of 5 years. All of them had great titles. I made good money. I had lots of responsibility, but none of them were doing work that I actually enjoyed. And as time went on, I became more and more miserable in that situation. That tends to happen. And there came a point where I just couldn't take it anymore, and Janet was in my life, and she said, you know, why don't you try doing something different than what you've done in the past? Gee, that's kind of a radical idea, isn't it? But what's the definition of insanity? Anybody know?
Doing over and over.
Over and over and expect to get different results, right? So that's what I'd done over and over, four times over 5 years. I did the same thing, somehow got the same results. What a surprise. And so then I said, okay, I'll try something different. So I took a position, didn't have such a fancy title. And by the way, yeah, I want to leave the lines open so we can interact. So if you're doing something or you have some background noise in where you are, then press star or just press the number 6. No star. Just press 6 on your phone and that'll mute your line out. But I'd like to leave the lines open so we can interact a little bit, because it's more fun for me that way. And heck, having fun with everything I do is my number two passion, so this is an important thing. So I took a new position. It didn't have a fancy title. It didn't even have much of a guaranteed income. It was commission-based, and yet it seemed to have great potential. It was selling software usability services to large companies, mostly the Fortune 500. And over the next 18 months, I learned how to do this job, and I found that I was pretty good at it, that it used the skills and the talents that I had developed over the years. And so it was exciting to see as I excelled in that position and took a leadership position, a leadership role in the sales force in my company. That was great. But after about 18 months, I discovered that something was missing, and this is the reason really why I'm telling you this story, is because most of us, if we get beyond simply making money-based decisions, or even when we are making money-based decisions, many of us, or most of us, will make choices about the work that we do based upon our skills and talents. And this is the way I define those things. Skills are the things that you have learned to do well by virtue of education or training. And talents are the things that you naturally do well, the gifts that you were born with. And of course, we can develop our talents as we can develop our skills. But we're Jen and I are working right now on a new book. Its theme is igniting passion in business. And we're co-authoring it with a fellow by the name of Steve Farber, who wrote an incredible book that I recommend to all of you called The Radical Leap. It's really fun. It's very business-oriented in some sense, but its message is applicable to anyone. And The Radical Leap by Steve Farber. And one of the things that Steve says that I really love is he says many of us get caught in the experience trap. You know, we do the same thing over and over again because that's what we did before. That's what we learned how to do. That's what we know. And this is what I would call our skills, right? That we get caught in the trap of just doing what we know instead of looking at what is it that really could bring us fulfillment, what is connected to the things that we care about, that matter to us, which is what we call, Janet and I call, your passion. So after 18 months or so at this wonderful job, I was making wonderful money. I was actually making more money than I had at any of my executive positions before, and yet I wasn't happy, and so what to do? And it was at that time, actually, around that time, that Janet introduced me to this simple little test that she had created so many years before that she kind of pulled out of the mothballs, because I'd known her for years. We'd been married for 5 years, and it never really came up until this point. And then she said, you know, let me take you through this. You might find it useful. And so we went through, and I identified my top five passions, and from that time began to make choices on a different basis. And I can honestly say that as a result of that, my life has changed very dramatically. Now, over the years, Jen and I have collaborated to create more depth and richness and fullness and a very wonderful prospect in the passion as it exists in the book today. And that, I hope, is the benefit that all of you can get, and we'll go through that process tonight in a few minutes. But I wanted to share this by way of background to let you know that, you know, that all of us, I think, or at least most of us, at some point or other, go through a period in our life or some time in our life. And for some of us, it's longer, some of us, it's shorter, but we go through a time where we're really soul-searching, right? And we begin to question the basis on which we've made decisions in the past. And that really is the first step, being able to step into a life that really supports your joy and fulfillment. It's the first step, because the whole purpose of the past is just to help you become a conscious creator of your life. Now, we've got a little bit of background noise on the line. What I'm going to do is just give me a minute. I'm going to mute the line, and then you'll still be able to comment. But just give me 1 minute.
All callers are muted and may unmute themselves by pressing 6.
So just to make it a little easier for all of us to hear, I've muted the line, but if you'd like to comment or ask a question at any time, then just press the number 6 on your phone. Don't press star or anything, just press the number 6, and that will unmute your line. So what do we mean by passion? People use the word passion in many different ways, and Janet and I use it in a very specific way, and that is that your passions are the things that you love most. They're the things that you care most deeply about in your life. They're the things that matter most to you, and when your life is connected to those things, then you feel passionate. And that's why we call them your passions, because it makes sense to us that your passions should be things that when you're doing them or when you're connected to them, you feel passionate. I hope that makes sense to all of you. And your passions may change over time, right? We say that, I'm sure many of you have heard the story of Hansel and Gretel, right? That this wonderful German fairy tale that, I think it's German, maybe it's Scandinavian, but we've all heard the story. And the story is that Hansel and Gretel left breadcrumbs that allows them to follow the breadcrumbs home after they escaped from the big bad witch. Now, the witch, for us, are these false beliefs, these concepts, the things that keep us from making decisions based on something other than what we really care about. They're based on the beliefs that we've grown up with. Most of us, from the time we're 8 or 10 years old, and maybe even before, were indoctrinated by parents, teachers, guidance counselors who themselves are not living their passions. And so in turn, they share their beliefs and concepts, which haven't worked for them, but they share them with us as children. And so we grow up thinking that we can't follow our dreams, that we have to be responsible, we have to make money, we have to pay the bills, you know, that if we have to get an education, that someone will hire us and pay us a good salary, and then we can carefully save up, and someday, then we can live our dreams. And the truth is that whole thing is an illusion. Now, that's not to say that it's not good to be responsible, because it is. It is good to be responsible, and it is good to take care of the people that you care about. And for most of us, we'll find that those things are, in fact, very closely aligned with our passions. And it also doesn't mean that we shouldn't take into account the value of learning skills and ways to develop our talents, but to make these principles, these things, the basis of our decision making, ultimately leads us only to unhappiness. And that's why most of us, if not all of us, at some point, we come to a point in our lives where we say, there's something has to change. Something has to be different in my life. There has to be a different way of living. And that's the point at which the passion test can be incredibly valuable. Because as we say in the passion test book, when you're clear, what you choose to have show up in your life will, and only to the extent you're clear. What you choose to have show up in your life will, and only to the extent that you're clear. And the whole purpose of the passion test process, and tonight we're only going to have time to go through the first one or two steps of this process, but the rest are in the book. They're all available to you. And so the value and purpose of the passion test process is to gain a level of clarity that for most of us we've never had in our lives. And then to have a simple tool, and this is really my aim and purpose in our call tonight, is to show you and to help you understand how to use this simple tool that you can use over and over and over again. It's not like you take the passion test once and done, finished. No. Janet and I have been doing this for years and years, and we still take the passion test every 4 to 6 months. And the value is because our passions do change, right? New situations and circumstances enter our lives. A couple of years ago, I was 40, you know, I remarried about 4 years ago, and a couple of years ago, I was fortunate to become the father of a beautiful, beautiful daughter who is now 2 years old. And I took the passion test just a month before she was born. Now, my passions, my top 5 passions, haven't changed much for about 5 years. maybe some words here and there, but really they hadn't changed very much. And now I went through the passion test at that time, and I was pretty shocked, actually, to discover that three of my top five passions had changed, just as a result of this new, incredible little person coming into my life. And so it's like that. Our passions can change as our life changes, but if we continue to get clear on the things that matter most to us, if we continue to hold them and give attention to them and make decisions based on them, then they will lead us to fulfill our purpose in life. In fact, the subtitle of our book, The Passion Test, is The Effortless Path to Discovering Your Life Purpose. And the reason it's the effortless path is because when you consistently choose in favor of your passions, and we'll talk more about that after we go through the process itself, when you consistently choose in favor of them, then you begin to find that your life feels more meaningful, that you feel more of a sense of purpose. You look back and at the time that you've been following your passions, and you say, wow, this is really why I'm here. I am aligned with my purpose. You know, there are some people, but they're not that many, who get hit by lightning, and all of a sudden they know, this is why I'm here. And even the ones that do, if you talk to Janet, she'll say that, you know, she got this kind of hit by lightning experience. If you've read the Passion Test, you know, when she went to the Gift of Success seminar and realized that she wanted to be a transformational speaker, just like the woman that she was listening to. And she is that today, of course. But even she will tell you that her passions have changed over time. And so this is the value of this tool. This is a tool you can use for the rest of your life, month after month, year after year. And in the beginning, you may find that it's useful to do it more often. You know, going through the passion test process, we identify our top five passions. Top five passions. Now, why do we identify just five? The reason is because our brains are wired in such a way that we can only hold 5 to 7 things in our minds at one time. And there's a principle, again, that we share in the Passion Test book, that what you put your attention on grows stronger in your life. What you put your attention on grows stronger in your life. What you give attention to becomes more dominant in your life. And it's a natural process because it's consciousness that is creating your reality. And when you focus consciousness, when you focus your awareness on something, then that thing becomes more prevalent, more awake in your life. And so by identifying our top five passions, what we've discovered is that then all your other passions, all the other things that are important, begin to come along almost automatically. Again, this is the effortless path to discovering your life purpose. And so in going through identifying your top five, now you have a powerful decision-making tool, and we'll talk about that before we're done. But I'd like to ask Diane, our volunteer for this evening, if you would please unmute your line, press 6, and then let's demonstrate for everyone.
Hi, Chris. Can you hear me now?
I can. Wonderful. Thank you.
Wow. You're so welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask you, let me give a few pieces of instruction for everyone who's listening, and then I'd like to have you read your top 10 passions as they are right now, and then we'll go through the process. Would that be okay?
Okay, absolutely.
So the beginning of the passion test is first to begin to think about the things that you love and care about most, and that means for us that you make a list. Now, when you make that list, you complete a very important and specific sentence, and that sentence is, when my life is ideal, I am dot, 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 and then you fill in the dot. When my life is ideal, I am. As you're doing this, as you're thinking about what it is you love, I encourage you not to censor yourself in any way. Don't think that these have to be things that are like high and mighty or that they're... that they have to be deeply profound or anything. What we've discovered is that your passions are indeed like breadcrumbs, and that wherever you start, it doesn't matter if your passion is to own and drive an incredible car, or if it's to save starving children in Africa. Both are equally useful, valuable along the path of passion. And as you think about the things that excite you, think about all the different areas of your life. And Diane, maybe you can help me. As one is thinking about what are the things that I love and care about, what are some of the categories that we might want to consider? What are some of the categories of our life that we might want to think about?
Certainly, relationships, finances, physical health and well-being, spirituality.
Let's do one at a time. Okay, so
get it.
So relationships, right? When my life is ideal, who do I love to spend time with? Who do I love to hang out with? Who is deeply important to me? Good. And then our finance and career, finances and career, right? And you can separate those if you want. And I'll talk about finances in a moment. But think about what do I love to do and get paid for? And then what was the other one you said? Health? Did you say health?
Health and well-being.
Health and well-being, absolutely. So how do I love to feel? How do I love to experience life from on a physical level? Good. What's another category?
For me, spirituality.
Spirituality. So what do I love to do to connect with that deepest part of life, the deepest part of existence? Good. What's another one?
Play and fun.
Play and fun. What do I love to do just for the fun of it? Absolutely. What's another one? Well, what about your environment? Would that be important?
Environment and the world, my relationship to the world. A bigger version of
the environment can be a number of things. It could be what sort of environment do I love to work and live in? That's one thing. It could be what sort of environments would I love to visit or spend time in? It could be all of those things. What sort of environment do I love to experience or would I love to experience? And maybe what about perhaps education? What would I or what do I love to learn?
Yes.
Also be useful. So as you think about all of these categories, then just write down the things that you love. And it's okay to write down the things you'd love to have as well, by the way. You know, what I love about the Passion Test is it's the one test that you can never fail. There's no wrong way to do it. We'll give you some guidelines, and in the Passion Test book and on these calls, we will give you some guidance that has proved useful for people. But you should never think that you're doing it wrong. It's not possible to do it wrong. This process cannot be done wrong. There just may be some things that may help it be more effective for you, and you just have to see that for yourself. So we begin by making this list. Now, sometimes people get stuck. I've noticed that there's sometimes people just get stuck. They're not used to thinking about what they love and what really matters to them, and so. They maybe can list one or two things, and then they don't know where to go from there. And there are a couple of things that come up. One is that sometimes we'll think about what I should want, right, as opposed to what I really want. And I encourage you to set aside the should as you go through this process. This is not about what anyone else thinks should be important to you. Or I remember one of our master trainers, she really took this advice to heart. She made her list, came up with her top five, and then she was shocked, and I mean shocked, to discover that food was higher on her list than her children. And she went, oh, my God, what kind of mother am I? Oh, dear. And it's easy to have those kinds of judgments. And yet, you know what Janet and I have discovered is that there's a reason why anything is on your list and why it's in the order that it's in, at least for right now. And you can't know that something that is deeply important to you may not be the thing that is absolutely necessary. In this case, just to give you an example, you cannot know that your passion for food might not be the thing that allows you to gain knowledge and information and to really understand the nature of food so fully and completely that when your children need that knowledge, that you can provide to them in the perfect and most wonderful way. And you just can't know that. It may be that your passion for food is exactly what one of your children absolutely needs in order to be able to live a happy, fulfilled, and successful life. So you simply can't know, and that's why it's so important and valuable to be innocent as you go through this process and do your best to let go of the judgment. That's why when we talk with couples about this, we encourage them to not do take each other through the passion test, at least in the beginning. Because, Diane, are you married, Diane, or no?
No, I'm not.
But have you ever seen married couples where one party has a very different idea about what the other part, what should be important to the other party?
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure, we have our opinions. So it's really important and valuable to be innocent in this process. Now, Diane, have you ever noticed that sometimes it's easier to think about what you don't want than what you do want?
Yes, I have. I just had a recent conversation about that, so, yes.
Yeah, I think that's true for many of us. And so one of the tips, here's a secret tip for all of you who are listening. One of the tips I would give is that if you find yourself getting stuck, or even if you just want to make sure that your list is as complete as possible, then think about whatever it is that you never want to experience in your life. What absolutely are you absolutely passionate about not experiencing in your life? And if you can think about those things, then just take that and turn it around. So an example might be that maybe you never want to be around anyone who is who lies, cheats, and steals. If that's the case, then you could turn that around and say, well, my life is ideal. I'm surrounded by people who are honest, generous, and live with the highest integrity. Does that make sense to you, Diane?
Beautiful, yes.
Yeah. So even the things you don't want can be the stepping stones to discovering what it is you really do want. What is it that really is important to you? What is it that really matters to you? So I want to ask you, Diane, I haven't edited, on purpose, I haven't edited your passions at all, and I'd like you to read them in their entirety, and then I'll comment on them, okay?
Certainly.
So, and if you would, begin with when my life is ideal, I am.
When my life is ideal, I am being an instrument through which original musical creations are birthed. When my life is ideal, I am singing with children and youth, being spontaneous and in the moment. When my life is ideal, I am creating little self-esteem affirmations with kids, singing and making a game out of positive affirmations, even acting them out, being silly and having fun, while all the time sharing and helping them to learn and self-affirm the message, I am a kid who matters. When my life is ideal, I'm engaged in group and community song and movement and rhythm. When my life is ideal, I'm creating sounds and combinations of sounds that no one has heard before. When my life is ideal, I'm helping to facilitate a new experience for someone, a first in life, an oh my God moment. When my life is ideal, I'm engaging in ensemble work and vocal or instrumental music, creative brainstorming with others. When my life is ideal, I'm sharing my passions and my joy with others. When my life is ideal, I'm using musical tools and toys as a means to foster creative self-expression. And when my life is ideal, I'm launching a nonprofit program for at-risk children and youth. It's experiential, hands-on, and creative. It uses rhythm and drumming and song to build bridges, heart-to-heart, hand-to-hand, voice-to-voice, helping to empower kids and learning that they matter, that they make a difference, and they can all touch lives in a positive and life-affirming way.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And for everyone listening, isn't it fun to hear someone's passions? God, what a delight it is. And of course, all of our passions are different. That's one of the reasons why I so enjoy doing these calls, you know, because they're always different and such a delight. And thank you, Diane, for being willing to share your passions with us. Now, there are a couple of things that I want to mention. First of all is that, you know, when we do workshops and on these calls, we ask our volunteer or we ask the people in the audience to list 10 passions. And I want to make it clear for everyone that that's only for the limitations of time in this kind of workshop setting. When you're doing listing your passions on your own, don't limit them to 10. Make them as long as list as many as you can think of. And if you have 15, 20, 30, it's fine. Perfect. Wonderful. So I just want to be sure everyone's aware of that. Now, sometimes the question comes up of, what if two passions are seem to be the same? And so I'd like to share with everyone the test that you can place, that you can use to see if two passions are the same or if they're just different words for the same passion. And there are two that you listed, Diane, that sound to me like they could be the same, but they might also be different. And so let's apply that test and see whether these are two different descriptions of the same passion or if they're two different passions, okay?
Certainly.
So now, the way that you, for everyone listening, the way that you tell if they're the same or not is you ask yourself the question that I'm going to ask Diane. And Diane, that question is, here are the two things that you read. One was being an instrument through which original musical creations are birthed. And the other one was creating sounds and combinations of sounds that no one has heard before. Okay?
Ah, yes.
And so what I'd like to ask you is, and for everyone listening, this is the question to ask yourself. Can you imagine that you could live one of those without the other? Or is one such an integral part of the other that there's no way that you could possibly experience them both, either one of them without the other? So can you imagine that you could be an instrument through which original musical creations are birthed, but never create any sounds or combinations of sounds that no one has ever heard before?
Yes. Wow.
Good.
Yes.
Great. Good. So, and that's the test. That means that those are potentially two different passions, and obviously they're related. But and if you find that they're different, and sometimes you may say no, you know, really those are two different descriptions of the same thing. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, then you just pick the one that you like the description best, and then you cross the other one off your list. But in this case, because they're different, then we're going to leave them both on the list. Now, for the sake of time, Diane, I'm not going to include all of your passions. I'm just going to include, I'm just going to choose five of them, and we'll go with those, okay?
Absolutely.
And we'll use this to demonstrate the process for everyone. So, what I'm going to do with Diane, let me explain and then we'll do it, Diane. What I'm going to do with Diane is I'm going to ask her to compare every one of the passions on her list to every other one. In this case, five of them, but when you do it for yourself, you'll compare all the items on your list. You're going to ask yourself which one's more important, and there's several different ways of asking that question, and Diane and I will go through that. As you go through, you always choose whichever one you decide is the one that you would choose that's more important, then you're going to compare that one to the next one on the list. So just for example, first you'll begin by comparing number one to number two. Whichever one's more important, maybe number one's more important. So you're going to compare that one to the next one on the list. So you're going to say, what's more important, number one or number three? Now, maybe again you say number one is more important. So now you compare one to four. You say, which is more important, number one or number four? Maybe this time number four is important. So that's the one you're going to compare to the next one on the list. So you say, what's more important, number four or number five? And then you'll continue down the list. Maybe number four continues to be more important. So you say, what's more important, number four or number six? Which have maybe four is still more important. And what's more important, four or seven? Four or eight? And always choosing the one, always comparing the one that you chose as more important to the next one on the list. When you get to the bottom of the list, you'll be left with just one that is the most important, that you said was the most, and that becomes your number one passion. So you're going to mark a number one by that passion, then you're going to go back to the top of the list and go through the whole process again, except you're going to skip the one that you marked as number one. Now, what sometimes people say is, but in your example, you never compared number four to number two or three. Don't you have to go back up and compare those? And the answer is no. You only ever have to go down your list. This is the great, wonderful simplicity of the passion test. You only go down the list. And the reason for that is simple. If one is more important than two and three, and four is more important than one, then by definition, four is also more important than two or three. And so because of that, you don't have to worry about going back up and comparing something lower on the list to the items higher on the list. You only ever go down the list. So, Diane, let's try it out and show everyone how it's done, okay?
All righty, I'm game.
Okay, good. So what's more important to you? being an instrument through which original musical creations are birthed, or singing with children and youth being spontaneous and in the moment.
Wow.
Now, notice that Diane hesitated. You know, it could happen that if you've written down things that are really important to you, sometimes it might be hard to make a choice. And so in that case, there's two other ways of asking this question, and I'm going to ask, let's ask Diane one of those ways. So Diane, if you could be an instrument through which original musical creations are birthed, but you could never sing with children and youth, you could never be spontaneous in the moment. Or, if you could be singing with children and youth, being spontaneous and in the moment, but never be an instrument through which original musical creations are birthed, which one matters more to you?
Singing with children and youth and being spontaneous and in the moment.
Did you notice that when you think about it in that way, that it became a little easier to see which one feels better to you?
Absolutely. There was clarity in that moment that you said that.
Right. Good. Well, thank you for that. Now, I want to remind everyone, just an alert for you, Diana, for everyone who's listening, that even though I make it sound as if you're giving one of them up, I want to make it clear that that's never the case. When you go, again, this is only the first step in the passionist process. When you go through the entire process, everything will be included. By the time you get done, every one of your passions will be wrapped into your 100th birthday speech, through into your final description of what matters most to you. But the process of gaining clarity requires making choices, and that's why we word the questions in this way. So let's continue on. What's more important to you, singing with children or participating in group and community songs? So if you could be singing with children and youth and being spontaneous in the moment, but you could never participate in group and community song, chant, movement, and rhythm. Or if you could be actively involved in group and community song and chant, movement, and rhythm, but never sing with children and youth, never be spontaneous or in the moment, which one matters more to you?
The kids have it.
Okay.
Singing with children and youth.
Good. So what's more important, singing with children and youth, being spontaneous and in the moment, or helping to facilitate a new experience for someone, a first in life, oh my God moment?
Helping to facilitate a new experience, an oh my God moment.
Wonderful. Okay. And what's more important? So whichever one Diane chose, that's the one I'm going to compare to the next one on the list. So in this case, what's more important? Helping to facilitate a new experience for someone, a first in life, oh my God moment, or launching a nonprofit program for at-risk youth and children? So again, if you could help facilitate a new experience for someone, an oh my God moment, but never launch a nonprofit program for at-risk children and youth, or if you could launch the most amazing nonprofit program for at-risk children and youth, but never help anyone facilitate a new experience, a first in life moment for them, which one matters more to you?
Helping to facilitate a new experience.
Okay.
Wow.
Fair enough. So, is that surprising to you?
It was. Until you turned it around the other way, and then it was just clear, and the other one dropped away. It's just amazing to hear that and feel it. So hear that clarity.
So this is your number one, at least out of this list. And so let's go through the process again and see how it shows up the second time around, okay? So what's more important to you, being an instrument through which original musical creations are birthed, or being involved in group and community song, chant, movement, and rhythm?
Group and community song, chant, and rhythm.
And what's more important, being involved in group and community song, chant, movement, and rhythm, or launching a nonprofit program for at-risk children and youth?
Nonprofit children and youth.
And what's more important, launching a nonprofit program for at-risk children and youth, or singing with children and youth, being spontaneous and in the moment? So we've already asked the question. I want to ask the question in a different way for you this time. just so that for everyone listening, so you can get a sense of different ways that you can ask this question. The second way, I've already done, and so don't answer me. I'm just going to review it for everyone. The second way of asking it is if you could be singing with children and youth, being spontaneous in the moment, but never launch a nonprofit program for at-risk children and youth. Or if you could launch a nonprofit program for at-risk children and youth, and you understand that includes all the other things you wrote about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you could do that, but never sing with children and youth, and never be spontaneous or in the moment, which one matters more to you? Now, don't answer that right now. That's the second way of asking the question. If you could have one but never have the other, or if you could have the second one but never have the first, which one matters more to you? The third way of asking the question is I would first ask you, Diane, if you would, to close your eyes. And then, if you would, create a picture in your mind. And in this picture, see yourself singing with children and young people. See yourself being spontaneous and in the moment. And hear yourself. Hear the song and the laughter. And hear yourself interacting with them and with others. And use all of your senses. Notice the smells and the tastes and the feelings that are generated by that experience. And just put yourself into it as fully and completely as you can. And just notice that in this picture, you haven't launched a nonprofit program for at-risk children and youth. Okay?
Yes.
So, and just notice how that feels to you. And then if you would you set that picture aside for a minute, Diane?
Certainly.
See that? And then this time, create a new picture in your mind. In this picture, see yourself launching a nonprofit program for at-risk youth and children. Notice that it is, how experiential and hands-on it is, how it uses rhythm and drumming and song to build bridges, heart-to-heart and hand-to-hand and voice-to-voice. Notice how it's empowering kids in learning that they matter, that they make a difference, that they can all touch lives in a positive and life-affirming way. And see yourself, again, use all of your five senses to experience that program and all its richness, all its fullness. And notice how the things that people, kids and parents, are saying to you and the gratitude that they're expressing for the program that you've created. And just notice that within all of this, you don't have any time to sing with the children or the youth. That maybe you're not really spontaneous or in the moment. Just notice that. And notice how that feels. And which of those two pictures feels better?
The second one.
Second one. Good.
Yeah,
fair enough.
But I was surprised to me it's the second one.
So, and did you notice that it was easier to feel the feelings of the thing when you created a picture of it?
Yes.
What it felt like to be in that situation.
Yeah.
Now, it's clear that... Sorry. Diane, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, sorry. I was getting some conference commands. But I want to make it clear to you and to everyone who's listening that it's important to go through this and be as innocent as you have been here today. Because it doesn't mean that you're never going to be spontaneous or in the moment. It doesn't mean that you're not going to get to sing with children and youth. It's just a matter of gaining clarity about what it is that matters more to you if you had to choose. And then if we continue this process, and we're not going to tonight, but if we continue this process, you might find that singing with children and youth, being spontaneous in the moment, was the next one on your list, right? And so there it is among your top five. So, Diane, thank you for going through this. So we've gone through it a couple of times. I want to do one more exercise with you, if we can, before I let you go. Is that all right?
I am definitely open to that. Thank you, Chris.
Sure. Absolutely. And do you feel like you have a good sense of the process that you can...
Oh, my God. This is amazing. It's amazing.
Oh, good. So what I'd like to do now is I'm going to take the five that I randomly chose. So they're not exactly your top five, but we'll use them as an example to score your passions. Now, for everyone listening, when you score your passions, you're gonna score them on a scale of 0 to 10. And you do this once you've identified your top five, then you want to score each of them and to see to what extent are you living those passions already in your life. And by the way, when you score them, it's no better thing to have tens than it is to have zeros. Each one is of great value. And if you find that you've got a whole set of zeros on your top five, then that is a wonderful gift, because now you know that there's some things you've identified as being deeply important to you that you can give more attention to than you have in the past. So let's go through, and just for fun, Diane, let's take five randomly of your five. We'll take the two that you identified and three others, and let's score them. So helping to facilitate a new experience for someone, a first in life, oh my God moment, if you would have scored that on a scale of 0 to 10, where 0 means that you're not doing that at all, and 10 means you're living it full out, there's no way you could be doing it any more than you already are, how would you score that?
Wow.
You don't have to think about it too much. You know, you have sort of a...
Two. No, the repercussions of it I was thinking of. A 2.
Oh, that's okay. The only repercussion is that if it's a low score, then you know that it's something that you need to give more attention to.
Yes.
So there's no right or wrong. There's no better or worse. Keep that in mind here, okay?
Got it.
So with them launching a nonprofit program for at-risk children and youth, where would you score that on a scale of 0 to 10? 0 means you haven't even started on it. You haven't even been thinking about it. 10 means that it's up and running, fully going, and alive and well.
A 3.5.
3.5. Okay, fair enough. Let's do a couple of others. What about singing with children and youth, being spontaneous and in the moment? If you were to score that one on a scale of 0 to 10, where would it show up?
About a 6.
Out of 6. Great. Wonderful. So I think that's enough for everyone to get the idea. And what's interesting, isn't it, Diane, now we identified a couple of your top ones, but it's typical. It's not unusual, let's just put it that way, for people to have some lower scores and some higher scores, particularly if you haven't been using this process actively. If you've been using the process, then generally you'll find that your scores tend to be higher because you've been consciously giving attention to the things that you care about. But these lower scores, now, helping to facilitate a new experience for someone, a first in life, oh my God moment. Diane, have you been giving a lot of attention to that, or have you had your attention on other things?
It's gotten a lot of mental attention recently, but not so much life experience recently.
Okay. And it's one of the principles that we teach in the Passion Test, again, I mentioned earlier in the call, is what you put your attention on grows stronger in your life. So this is something that's very important to you, it would seem, right?
Yes, yes.
And yet you haven't been giving so much attention to it. And so it makes sense that your score for that, you know, the extent to which that's been present in your life is not so great right now, because it really hasn't. Other things have been getting your attention.
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It does. Thank you.
And singing with children and youth, being spontaneous and in the moment, is that something that you give more attention to? Is that something that you make a point of doing in your life?
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's not surprising that the score would be higher. Huh? And I have a feeling with you is that your score has a lot to do with that you have high standards when it comes to this. Is that true?
I'm kind of opinionated about how I think I should be enrolling in this, yes.
Yeah, exactly. That was my sense. And so,
that was a very tactful way of putting it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely welcome. Thank you for being willing to share these beautiful passions with everyone. And I just want to mention to you that it's great to have high standards, and also I would encourage you and everyone who's listening to also celebrate the times when you find yourself really giving attention to and focusing, spending time on the things that you really care about, the things that matter to you. Celebrate those times, you know. Celebrate the fact that, hey, this is it. This is important to me, and I'm doing it. And that's something to be joyful about.
Yes.
So, Diane, thank you again. Thank you so much for being here.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Chris. It's been wonderful.
Great. Good. And you can press 6 to mute your line out if you'd like. And I want to take a few minutes now to answer one or two of the questions that were submitted. And as I mentioned again, that I know some of you may have to leave after the first hour, so we'll kind of wrap up initially for that. And then those of you who would like to stay on the line, then you're welcome to, and that'll be the opportunity if you have some questions that you'd like to ask, that we can take those questions. But I want to just review some of the questions that people submitted. Now, someone said that here's a question that I've never answered, and so this is the one that they posed. He said, how do you figure this? You have a great passion about something, but you suck at it. Where does that lead you? I thought this is a great question, and the fact is that first of all, while it could be true that you have a great passion for something that you're not very good at, the things that you're good at fall into the category of skills and talents. You may remember earlier in this call we talked about skills being the things that you've been educated in or learned to do well or been trained to do well, and talents being the things that you naturally do well. And for most of us, the things that we're good at, the things that we do well, also tend to be things that we love to do. Now, it can happen that there could be something that we're really passionate about. And there are two aspects of this that I would encourage all of you to think about. One is that sometimes this may be us thinking as opposed to feeling. You know, the mind is a great confuser, and it will have a tendency to trip us up sometimes when we're trying to get clear on the things that we feel deeply. There are so many things that we have been taught to think, and that we think, oh, this is a great thing. You know, we may think that to eliminate poverty in the world, that's a great thing. That's a passion that I want to follow, and it may well be. And I don't want to, one of my dearest friends, Lynn Twist, had a huge passion for eliminate hunger in the world, and as a result, she raised hundreds of millions of dollars just for that purpose over a period of 20 years. She helped to take the Hunger Project and to make it a major force in the world, something that had been conceived by Buckminster Fuller. And so that can absolutely be a passion. But what you'll discover is that, in my experience, that the key to being able to monetize your passions, that means the key to being able to do the thing you love and to earn an income doing it, is to combine it with your natural skills and talents. And what Lynn Twist, and I'll use her as an example, Lynn Twist, any of you that want to know more about Lynn Twist, she's a wonderful and incredible woman. She wrote an amazing book called The Soul of Money. And you can go to soulofmoney.org. And someone has their line unmuted. If you could press 6, that would be great. Then it would be easier for us to read here. Just press 6 on your line to mute your line. And the soulofmoney.org, or you can also go to pachamama.org. Pachamama is PachaMama.org. This is Lynn's current passion, and it's a fascinating passion. She works with indigenous tribes in South America these days. But whatever your passion may be, the key to earning a living, to making a living at it, is to combine it with the things that you're naturally good at. So combine it with your skills, combine it with your talents. And so in Lynn's case, she's very good at speaking and inspiring people. She has a natural talent for communication. She has a natural talent for connecting with people on the heart level. And so it's by using that talent, those talents, that she was able to connect with large-scale, with people who had lots of money, and to be able so she was able to combine those talents with her passion, and as a result, to be able to earn a living, to be able to raise hundreds of millions of dollars, to do something that she deeply we believed in. So what I would say is that I would have to know a bit more of the specifics about what is the great passion that one that someone could have that maybe that they're not good at. But in my experience, if you're passionate about something, there's some way that you can take your skills and your talents, combine them with your passions to be able to create an income. So there one other question that someone asked that I'm interested in learning, what is the one single factor that you believe is the most common obstacle people encounter when setting an intention to live a life of passion? And I've already mentioned it in this call, but I want to mention it again. And that is false beliefs, false concepts, false ideas. It really comes down to believing our thoughts. And when I say believing our thoughts, what I mean is that most of the time, most of the thoughts that we have are built out of the training, the indoctrination that we've received from the time we were children. And if those thoughts are not supporting us in living a passionate life, then they are going to be the biggest obstacle, and I have seen it over and over and over again. And that's why what's so important and what's so critical to be able to live a passionate life is to be able to establish new habits, new patterns, new mental and emotional patterns, new and different ways of relating to our world. And in my experience, that only happens through practice. It's one of the reasons why I recommend to everyone and anyone who's really committed to living a passionate life that you join us in turning the passion statistics upside down, that you go through our 3.5-day passion test certification training, become a certified facilitator. Add an extra stream of income to your life by giving workshops and taking people through the passion test. But in the process, perhaps most importantly, to develop the habit of living a passionate life yourself. One of the things I haven't mentioned yet tonight that I want to share with you as we close this first hour is the one secret that can guarantee you a passionate life. And I encourage you, if you haven't heard this before, then write it down. Whenever you're faced with a choice, a decision, or an opportunity, choose in favor of your passion. I'll say it again. Whenever you're faced with a choice, a decision, or an opportunity, choose in favor of your passion. Choosing in your favor, in fact, this one secret is the thing that is shared. It's shared in common by all successful people. And here's another book for you to read. If you want to read a fabulous book, it's a book we call The Companion Guide to the Passion Test. It's called Success Built to Last. The authors are Stuart Emery, E-M-E-R-Y, Mark Thompson, and Jerry Porras. And it's called Success Built to Last. And in that book, you'll discover that they interviewed the most successful people in the world, and what they had all developed, the habits that they had all developed, was choosing in favor of their passions, making significant decisions based upon the things that matter most to them in their lives. It's easy enough to say that. To be able to do that, in my experience, requires support and practice. It's so wonderful. And those who go through our PASTA certification training, whether they choose to actively build a practice as a PASTA facilitator or simply use the passion test with their friends and family, what they discover is that before too long, they simply can't do anything and they're not passionate about any longer. You know, when you teach these things, when you help others to discover your passion, their passions, that you're forced in a very wonderful and effortless and gentle way, you're forced to live those principles yourself. And it does help to have support along that way. And that's why we call those who completed the certification course our passions of family. Because we stay in touch. Every month we get on the phone with all of our facilitators, and we have many different programs for them to be involved with and to participate in so that you continue to have that support, to have people who are as committed to living a passionate life as you are, to help you along the way, to make it easy, comfortable, and nourishing as you go through the process of developing those new habits. Because to be honest with you, creating new habits, changing your beliefs can sometimes be a bit uncomfortable. But it can be, it doesn't have to be difficult. By having the support that our facilitators have, it makes it possible to develop those new habits in a very easy, gentle, and effortless way. So I want to encourage any of you that may have the slightest inkling, if you're really deeply committed to living a passionate life, if that's really important to you, then consider becoming a passionate facilitator. just go to thepassiontest.com, thepassiontest.com/search, C-E-R-T. Again, go to thepassiontest.com/search, C-E-R-T. And so for those of you that may need to leave now, thank you so much for being with us. And remember that you're invited to these calls on the second Tuesday of every month. I love being with you, and I love the questions that are submitted. And if you want to submit a new question before our next call, then just go to AskChrisAndJanet.com. AskChrisAndJanet.com. So now I'm going to continue on for a bit longer and answer some more of the questions that some of you submitted. And in the process, I would like to... I want to also invite you, if you have a burning question, then just press 6 on your phone. Press the number 6. Unmute your line, and then I'm happy to take any questions you may have that you'd like to ask now. But in the meantime, I want to... Here's the next question that someone asked. They said, I'm not sure I know what my life purpose is. Any suggestions on how to find out? And yes, I have very clear suggestions on how to find out. And you know, it comes back to what I mentioned earlier in this call, that your passions are like breadcrumbs, and your passions may change as you go through your life. But when you consistently choose in favor of your passions, when you use that one secret that we talked about that guarantees a passionate life, and consistently choose in favor of your passions, then you'll find that your life begins to feel more and more purposeful. And it's not necessary to have some brilliant flash of inspiration and know, ah, this is my purpose in life. That can happen, but it's not necessary. All that's necessary is to align your life with the things that you care most deeply about. Go through the passion test, discover your top 5 passions, and then choose consistently in favor of them, and you'll discover that your life feels purposeful, it feels meaningful. You will find yourself effortlessly living your passion, the thing that really matters. So, the next question that was submitted is, someone asked, what one thing in deciding to lead a passionate life makes a difference? What one thing, if I did it now, would have the most impact toward living the life of my dreams? And that one thing is the thing I mentioned here. It's the secret that guarantees a passionate life is to consistently choose in favor of your passion. And you know, one of the wonderful ways of doing that, of making it easy to do that, all of us are faced with decisions and choices all the time, right? Throughout our day. And so, you know, it's not going to be very easy to choose in favor of your passions if you don't remember what they are. Would you agree? I'm sure you would. So one of the ways that we suggest to keep your passions, your top 5 passions, very much in your awareness is get some 3x5 cards. At the top of the card, write when my life is ideal, I am, and then write your top 5 passions up there. And then put your passions up in different places around your home. And so here, let's have a little interaction. So if you would, press 6 on your phone and share with me where are some places that you might put those cards up, so that you can see them when you're faced with decisions. Just press 6 on your phone to unmute your line, and then you can share. Someone's moving around there. I'm going to open up the line. Hold on.
All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
So, hello, everyone. So, what are some places? Share with me. What are some places that you might put those cards when you're faced with a choice? On a bathroom mirror, absolutely. Where's another place?
On my back door as I'm walking out of the house.
On your back door. Excellent. Good. What's another place? Well, how about on your computer or in your car as you're driving? Of course, you may not want to But, you know, one thing some people do is they put them in their phone. Anybody ever get a phone call? Sure, we all get phone calls. So these are different places where you can put these things up and have them where you can see them. So I think this is enough questions. If there's anyone who has a question, this is your opportunity to ask it now. Otherwise, I think we'll bring the call to a close for this evening. And I want to thank you for being with me. I want to thank you all for your commitment to living your passions. And I want to encourage you again, if you're really committed to living a passionate life, then go to www.thepassiontest.com/search and just take a look through and see what's involved in becoming a certified passion test facilitator. See what's involved with creating the mental and emotional patterns that can allow you to live a passionate life and have the support along the way to really live that life full out. And I want to thank all of you for being with me, and it's such a pleasure and delight on each of these calls. So good night, everyone.